Ladies and gentlemen, if I may have your attention, please. Attention, please. May I have your attention, please? Thank you very much. Justin Shubo is a good friend. I met Justin about, well, it's been over 10 years ago. And at that time, I was on the board of directors, I still am on the board of directors, of the National Civic Arts Society, an organization that promotes the classical in architecture and art. Justin understood the role of beauty in the arts, including the building arts. He was a graduate of Yale Law School, which is important as opposed to Yale Architecture School, the latter being a font of bad architects who turn out bad architecture. Justin went on to become NCAS's president, and he was highly influential in the executive order signed by President Trump to require federal buildings to be built with classical architecture. The Make City Beautiful Again order was in effect for a few months until, unfortunately, Mr. Biden took the Oval Office, and he promptly rescinded the executive order. Mr. Trump also had appointed Justin as a member of the commission, U.S. Commission on Fine Arts, and Justin was elected chairman. Biden also undid that. Trump's executive order and Justin's appointment were reversed by Trump's successor, but he remains a leader in the classical movement. The New York Times says he's one of modern architects' greatest critics. I agree. If you're interested, I know membership in the National Civic Arts Society is still open to interested people. Please welcome Justin Shubo.
Thank you, Howard. I'd like to thank Bill McClay and the Philadelphia Society for inviting me to speak today. I'm going to discuss a topic that had barely received any attention until President Trump brought it to national prominence. My subject is federal architecture and the return of classicism. As Howard mentioned, I am president of the National Civic Arts Society. We begin with the premise that a civilization's most important architecture is its civic art and architecture, since these structures are consciously intended to express ideas and values. As the seminal modernist architect Mies van der Rohe said, architecture is the true battleground of the spirit. Like Pericles, the builder of the Parthenon in ancient Athens, all great statesmen have recognized the importance of architecture for the body politic. After much of the British Parliament was severely damaged by German bombing in World War II, Winston Churchill gave a speech calling for rebuilding the Parliament exactly as it was. He famously said, quote, "We shape our buildings, thereafter our buildings shape us." He claimed that the Parliament chamber, in which the political parties sit facing each other in the rectangular room, helped to foster Britain's beneficent two-party system. He half-jokingly said that in the French Parliament, by contrast, which was semicircular, one could gradually move to the left without anybody noticing. America's founding fathers took great care in choosing the design of the nation's capital and its core buildings of government. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson personally oversaw the competitions to design the Capitol building and White House and influenced the designs themselves. As you likely know, both were also talented architects in their own right. Jefferson advised Americans that, quote, "Architecture is among the most important arts, and it is desirable to introduce taste into an art which shows so much." Jefferson had great ambitions for new American architecture. He aimed, quote, "to improve the taste of my countrymen, to increase their reputation, to reconcile them to the respect of the world, and procure them its praise." Washington and Jefferson consciously decided that the plan of Washington, D.C., and its most important structures were to be classical in design. the physical manifestation of the American form of government and its political aspirations, including such values as good order, benevolent hierarchy, and reason. This decision connected the Capitol to the ideals of Republican Rome and Democratic Athens. Believing the classical tradition to be time-honored and timeless, Jefferson expressed his personal desire for a Capitol designed after, quote, one of the models of antiquity which have had the approbation of thousands of years. He understood that the noble architecture of antiquity was the constant measure of permanent values. The founders invented a national idiom using the traditional vocabulary and grammar from the classical world. The White House and Capitol, the National Mall, and the plan for the entire city, they are universally recognized symbols of the United States that we take pride in. In a national poll, those government buildings were listed among Americans' favorite top 10 favorite buildings. Now, if you'll allow me to give a quick overview of the history of federal architecture, American government design really stems back to this building by Thomas Jefferson, the Virginia Capitol, based on a classical temple located in France today. Of course, we later have the White House. This is the original sketch for the Capitol building. George Washington had a strong hand in the competition. Here is the Second Bank of the United States in Philadelphia, which is Greek Revival. The Patent Office in DC, which is now the National Portrait Gallery. The Pension Building, also in DC. And here's an interesting example of an Italianate courthouse in Savannah, Georgia. In 1901, the Treasury Department codified existing practice by making classicism the official federal style. Quote, the department decided to adopt the classic style of architecture for all buildings as far as it was practicable to do so, and it is believed that this style is best suited for government buildings. The experience of centuries has demonstrated that no form of architecture is so pleasing to the great mass of mankind as the classic, or some modified form of the classic, and it is hoped that the present policy may be followed in the future in order that the public buildings of the United States may become distinctive in their character. Instead of squelching good design, after this directive, there was an efflorescence of authentic American architecture in which citizens could take pride, including such beautiful buildings as the National Archives and U.S. Supreme Court, which were built, mind you, in the quote-unquote modern era. Here's an example of Beaux-Arts architecture, the Custom House in New York City. Here is a just humble post office. Similar buildings were built around the country, showing how even ordinary buildings could be imbued with dignity. Another courthouse in a small town, Walla Walla, showing despite they probably didn't have a lot of money for building in such a location, but you could still identify it as a civic building. Then later, there is the Federal Triangle in Washington, D.C. Andrew Mellon, Secretary of the Treasury, required that the complex be classical. Here's the FTC building. Here's an example of a courthouse in Waco showing how there was also diversity of more vernacular styles across the country. And here's an example of a Colonial Revival courthouse. This is the was now the Thurgood Marshall U.S. Courthouse in New York City. It's showing how you can do skyscrapers in the classical style. And then, of course, we come to the Supreme Court building, which was built pretty recently, in 1936. After World War II, however, the newly created General Services Administration, the agency responsible for all federal buildings and courthouses, abandoned classicism in favor of modernism. Almost completely obliterating tradition, modernism originally became ascendant in continental Europe between the First and Second World Wars. It was a time in which many artists and architects in Europe were demoralized, To many, it had seemed like their civilization had self-destructed and revolutionary ideas of the political left and right were prevalent. Like many modern ideologies, modernist architecture was founded via innumerous competing manifestos, many of them with heated, urgent language, sometimes like that of a prophet. Most do have a common core, however. They assert that architecture must follow the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times. In other words, the all-encompassing character of the culture. The thought was that architecture must flow from the inevitable unfolding of capital H history, the self-revealing logic of its era. It was a kind of metaphysical faith in the progress of history. Virtually all of the early 20th century architectural manifestos proclaimed ideologies opposed to the individual man. Only the collective mattered, the mass of men. The manifestos utterly rejected tradition in the past and called for a universal revolution in the social order. For instance, one manifesto called for a dictatorship of the machine. Another praised the death of the soul. In 1920, Theo van Doesburg, the Dutch painter and architect who founded the De Stijl movement, said, quote, the square is the sign of a new humanity. It is something like the cross of the early Christians. You might have heard of the Bauhaus, the most important modernist school, which was located in Germany. Its 1923 manifesto announced that the movement, quote, founded after the catastrophe of the war and the chaos of the revolution, becomes the rallying point of all those who wish the cathedral, who wish to build the cathedral of socialism. Here is an early building by the architect Mies van der Rohe, one of the most important 20th century architects. It's a communist monument that was built in Berlin in 1926. You can see the hammer and sickle. Modernism is perhaps best described as the architecture of hyper-rationality. It is severe, disciplined, and without emotion. It is the physical manifestation of what Max Weber called the iron cage of reason. Modernism's utopian spirit is that of self-conscious modernity, functionalism, hygiene, and efficiency. In short, of rational economic activity. This explains why modernist buildings, whether schools, churches, or housing, especially public housing, often look like factories or corporate office buildings. In modernism, everything is ruthlessly laid bare. Indeed, in the 1960s, there began a style of architecture called brutalism, based on the use of raw, rough concrete. It claimed to be honest, to show the world in all its harshness and unpleasant reality. Brutalism, in fact, was inspired by flak towers in Nazi Germany. It came to be the de facto official government style of the Great Society social planning in America and that of socialism in Europe. Brutalist buildings often appear in movies depicting a dystopian future, such as In a Clockwork Orange. Although largely hated by the public, brutalism still has its admirers among elites. For instance, the BBC filmmaker Jonathan Mead said a few years ago, quote, there is something about being excited by brutalism which is terrifying and slightly sinister that I find very appealing. It was a harsher world with a harsher architecture. In other words, the fear that such architecture induces is a plus, not a minus. Modernism rejects traditional standards of beauty and comfort for the sake of a higher end, namely power and efficiency. Modernism replaced the human needs and purposes of traditional architecture with the needs and functions of the man machine, the human cog. In fact, the leading modernist architect, Le Corbusier, probably the most influential architect of the 20th century, he famously said that a house is a machine for living. Like Pol Pot wishing to start from the year zero, Le Corbusier in the 1920s proposed leveling most of Paris and replacing the structures with giant tower blocks that look like public housing. So this is what he proposed. Those towers are where Les Marais is, the historic neighborhood. And this is a contemporary computer rendition showing what Paris would look like if he had had his way. That's Notre Dame on the right. Modernism included the austere, box-like international style, which, as its name suggests, rejected any regionalism or national identity in design. Fittingly, it was the style chosen for the United Nations headquarters. This, our screen captures from the Jacques Tati's 1967 movie Playtime. These are travel posters, and you can see it says London, Hawaii, Mexico, Stockholm, and so on, and you see the same building in every location. As I said, after World War II, the American federal government, oh, and here's one more, oh, the building's missing, that's okay. As I said, after World War II, American federal government architecture became entirely modernist. During the mid-20th century, the government built the generic boxes and, to a lesser extent, the steel and glass cages that came to exemplify corporate America and international business. It was the architecture of rational bureaucracy. The aesthetic line between public and private buildings was erased. Federal buildings were indistinguishable from commercial office buildings. This was no accident, since many modernists explicitly rejected the idea that buildings should show their purposes. The hegemony of modernism in federal architecture was formalized in 1962 when Daniel Patrick Moynihan, then a young staffer working in the Labor Department, inserted a single page in a White House report on government office space. He rather ambitiously titled it Guiding Principles for Federal Architecture. GSA would go on to adopt the principles, which rejected official classicism and implicitly favored modernism. Indeed, although the principles state, quote, the development of an official style must be avoided, modernism would, in fact, become de facto official. Indeed, since the adoption of the principles until the 1990s, not a single government building of any significance was erected in a classical or traditional style. I should emphasize that the guiding principles also state, quote, design must flow from the architectural profession to the government and not vice versa. In other words, the government, that is the client, abdicated authority. It allowed the elite private sector, which was entirely modernist, to dictate design to the government. This reversal of authority continues today. Let me emphasize that the federal government is the largest patron of art and architecture in the country. It spends billions upon billions on its buildings. Federal buildings constructed after the guiding principles were at best undistinguished, but very often ugly and soulless. Here's some photos of those buildings. Here's a courthouse sort of reminiscent of the United Nations building. One of these faceless punch card facades. This is the Chicago Federal Center by Mies van der Rohe, the architect who did that communist building I showed you earlier. It's international style. You may have seen the movie The Chicago of the Trial Seven. I'm sorry, the movie The Trial of the Chicago Seven. That trial actually took place in this building. Yet in the movie, both for the interior and the exterior, they use a classical courthouse because no one looks at this and sees justice being done. This is a federal building in Boston by Walter Gropius, who, like Mies van der Rohe, was a German architect who actively sought work from the Nazis. This is the inviting entrance to the building. This is the notorious HUD headquarters in Washington, D.C., built by the important architect Marcel Breuer. So brutalist building. Jack Kemp, when he was Secretary of HUD, said this building was like seven floors of basement. Later, Sean Donovan, a Democrat head of HUD, also seconded what Jack Kemp said. And then later, Julian Castro, another Democrat HUD secretary, seconded what Jack Kemp said. Castro even said that it looked like something from the Soviet Union. So it's an interesting case where we have both Republican and Democrat leaders hating brutalist architecture. At the same time, GSA actually upholds this building as an example of excellence in federal design. This is the FBI headquarters, which is being torn down at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. When it was constructed, J. Edgar Hoover said it's like something from Mars. I like to call it the Ministry of Fear. This is the U.S. Tax Court in Washington. Perhaps fittingly, it does feel like the oppressive power of the IRS. And then later, you get many courthouses that essentially had no architecture whatsoever, like this building in Baltimore. In 1994, GSA created the so-called Design Excellence Program to remedy what the agency, like its clients and the public, perceived to be the abysmal quality of its buildings. The program, which continues today, gives great weight to the judgment and taste of private sector architects and places high value on quote-unquote creativity and innovation. Under the Design Excellence Program, buildings have designed with multifarious, modernist, and postmodernist vocabularies such that there tends to be little similarity or continuity among them. Indeed, what we get is stylistic chaos. Following the intent of Moynihan's guiding principles, the program is heavily biased against traditional design. Design Excellence has completed 78 federal buildings and courthouses, yet only 6 of them have been classical or traditional. That is just 8%. Many Design Excellence buildings, including those by name architects, have been architectural failures. Some have engendered controversy, and some are widely hated. Many of the designs resemble commercial architecture, and many courthouses are unrecognizable as such. The meaning and symbolism of the buildings are also inscrutable to the public and ordinary users. Demonstrating originality and novelty for their own sakes, some federal designs are avant-garde and even disorderly. Furthermore, the buildings often show little recognition of their locale and urban context. So if I can show you some Design Excellence buildings. This is an early Design Excellence project in Kansas City. It actually has those gun-slit windows reminiscent of mid-century government design. This is Richard Meyer, a famous architect's courthouse in Phoenix, Arizona. You might think it doesn't make a lot of sense to build a glass box in the desert. This is the atrium. It gets so hot in there that security guards are allowed to wear shorts. Now, if you know anything about the history of design and philosophy, you might look at that cylinder in the middle, and it might remind you of a panopticon. This is another courthouse by Richard Meyer in New York. It's enormous. One reviewer said that it had a sinister aspect to it. Here's the courthouse in Orlando. There was a major fight over this design. The federal judges in Orlando wanted a classical design, as did courthouse workers, but GSA imposed this modernist design on them. Here's ATF headquarters in Washington. Here's a courthouse, the courthouse in Austin. Many people think this looks like a Jenga structure. Here's a deconstructivist courthouse in Las Vegas. You can see it's a bunch of disparate pieces that have sort of been glued together. Courthouse in Miami, to me, looks like a high-end condo building. This is the U.S. mission to the United Nations, another of those government buildings that has essentially no architecture. Courthouse in El Paso. This is one of these generic postmodernist courthouses that are going up around the country. This is a pretty aggressive building. It's the federal building in Miramar, Florida. Here's one of those federal courthouses that just looks like a corporate office building. This is a glass box in Los Angeles. This is one of the worst recent federal buildings. This is the U.S. courthouse in Salt Lake City. So bad that it appeared on the cover of Salt Lake City Weekly. If I could read the headline, "Resistance is Futile, How Utah Ended Up with a Borg Cube for a Federal Courthouse." Now again, this building is loved by GSA. They have given it, it's a design award. Here's one of the more avant-garde designs. This is a spaceship in Eugene, Oregon. Here's the interior with lines askew and sort of chaotic. Now, the architect here, Tom Main, actually talked about how he sort of was able to get some of the federal judges to move away from Greek idiom and accept his design. Here's another building by Tom Main. This is the San Francisco Federal Building. Looks like some kind of alien spacecraft that's about to shoot laser beam at you. Here's a close shot of that building. Here's a side view and the interior, which looks like something that's already been hit by an earthquake. Now, it should come as no surprise that Main has designed buildings like this. He's actually said that his buildings take an aggressive approach toward the public. And he even said that he put covert guillotines over the judges' benches at one of his courthouses. But I think something even more indicative of Main's disturbing worldview, when discussing the September 11 attacks, he told an interviewer, quote, "I have no empathy. It doesn't make me weep. I could make a better case for justifying the terror than the other way around. I am completely out of sync with America." Mind you, the New York Times called Main the federal government's favorite architect. Now, here is a rare example of a new classical federal courthouse which shows what the alternative to the Design Excellence Program could be. This is the Tuscaloosa Federal Building and Courthouse, which is Greek Revival. This building exists only because Alabama Senator Richard Shelby, using his clout as chairman of the Appropriations Committee, fought GSA to get a classical design. I would love to see other senators do the same for their states. And as you might imagine, GSA hates this building. The future of federal architecture was looking bleak until President Trump entered the picture. He took dramatic action at the end of his term when he issued an executive order that radically reoriented federal architecture. Titled Promoting Beautiful Federal Civic Architecture, the order highlighted the inspiring history of classical federal design going back to the founders and bemoaned the decline starting in the 1950s. The order noted that since that time, buildings have sometimes been ugly and often disliked by ordinary people, even if the designs appealed to architectural elites. The order singled out GSA's Design Excellence Program for critique and noted that it failed to provide for local communities to give input on designs. The executive order did a number of revolutionary things. To quote the key passage, here's another shot of that courthouse. To quote the passage, "Federal public buildings should uplift and beautify public spaces, inspire the human spirit, ennoble the United States, and command respect from the general public. They should also be visually identifiable as civic buildings and, as appropriate, respect regional architectural heritage. Architecture, with particular regard for traditional and classical architecture, is the preferred architecture for federal public buildings. In the District of Columbia, classical architecture shall be the preferred and default architecture for federal public buildings, absent exceptional factors necessitating another kind of architecture." In other words, the order gave special regard to classical and traditional design for federal buildings and courthouses across the country. The order broadly defined classical architecture to encompass such styles as neoclassical, Georgian, Federal, Greek Revival, Beaux-Arts, and Art Deco. Traditional architecture was also broadly defined to include historic architecture such as Gothic, Romanesque, Pueblo Revival, Spanish Colonial, and other Mediterranean styles. Thus, there was to be diversity across the country. The order did not outright ban modernism, but it required, quote, "that all federal building designs command respect of the general public for their beauty and visual embodiment of America's ideals." The order did, however, explicitly make it more difficult for GSA to approve brutalist and deconstructivist designs, which are the least appropriate for our democracy, as well as the most hated by the public. Brutalism is the architectural equivalent of a boot stomping on your face for all eternity. while deconstructivism is the architecture of disorder, fragmentation, and even chaos. The executive order was at its most rigorous regarding Washington, D.C., mandating that new federal buildings in the city be classical. This would apply, for example, to a new FBI building in the city. To be clear, the mandate did not apply to Smithsonian museums, which are not overseen by GSA. As for the country as a whole, the order also stated, quote, GSA should seek input from future users of applicable public buildings and the general public in the community where such buildings will be located before selecting an architectural firm or design style. In other words, for the first time since GSA was established, ordinary people would have a say. There would finally be an element of democracy in building design. In early 2020, a draft of the executive order was leaked, which sparked a firestorm of outrage from cultural elites. I don't believe the order was controversial among ordinary Americans, but as for elites, the American Institute of Architects, which is dominated by modernists, wailed that the order was anti-democratic and would set an extremely harmful precedent. A media pile-on ensued. The New York Times, in a screed against contemporary classical architecture, published an editorial titled, "What's So Great About Fake Roman Temples?" The editorial noted that the following founding fathers leaned heavily on ancient precedents, but the Times claimed that American architecture today, quote, no longer needs to wear borrowed clothes. Of course, if classical public buildings constructed today are fake Roman temples, then it logically follows that the Times thinks that the US Capitol and Jefferson Memorial were equally fake when they were built. Numerous other media outlets lashed out at the proposed executive order. Wired magazine fretted about the new architects of fear, while many commentators compared Trump to Hitler, claiming that this was the architecture of white supremacy. Happily, there were a few exceptions on the left. For example, the liberal New Republic magazine, after publishing an article accusing the order of being reactionary, did manage to publish a piece titled "The Non-Fascist Case for Classical Architecture." It was a relief to know that one could like classical architecture without being a fascist. As for commentators on the right, Tucker Carlson, Ross Douthat, and many others praised the executive order, as did articles in National Review, City Journal, and elsewhere. The Wall Street Journal featured an op-ed titled "Drain the Swamp of Ugly Architecture," while Senator Mike Lee of Utah published a blistering opinion piece in The Federalist. Alas, almost immediately after taking office, President Biden rescinded Trump's order. Biden provided no reason for doing so, but the American Institute of Architects had been heavily lobbying him. And of course, there was the weight of Bien Pensant opinion. But what about the typical American? What does he or she actually want? Well, I have the answer, and I have strong empirical evidence for it. In October 2020, the National Civic Arts Society completed a visual survey conducted by the Harris Poll of 2,000 American adults. What we did was show pairs of photos equally matched in, you know, shape, sky, and so on, to make fair comparisons, asking people, which do you prefer, you know, this building or that building? And for instance, in this case, HUD is on the right, while the EPA headquarters, a classical building in the Federal Triangle, is on the left. And here we find that the classical building is favored by 81% of the people surveyed. Overall, the survey showed that 72% of Americans prefer classical and traditional architecture for US courthouses and federal office buildings. The poll found a widespread preference for tradition among all demographic groups, including age, gender, race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status. The survey results were also strongly bipartisan, with tradition being favored by 70% of Democrats and 73% of Republicans. Here's another pair of slides, this one with the historic, more of a Spanish style on the right. Here's another example where classicism blew modernism out of the water, 81% to 19%. Thus, unlike the elites who howled over the executive order, when normal people see a classical courthouse, they don't see a fake Roman temple, they see a temple of justice. Unfortunately, there is now pending in the U.S. House of Representatives a bill called the Democracy in Design Act, which is intended to prevent any future executive order like the one President Trump issued. The act's title is Orwellian, since what it would do is codify as law the 1962 Guiding Principles for Federal Architecture, the very principles that are responsible for the hegemony of modernism. It appears that the American Institute of Architects is the force behind the bill. The last thing modernist architects want is to lose their grip on power. It remains to be seen whether the bill will pass the House, let alone the Senate. I remain optimistic, however. Although our cultural elites are proponents of the permanent avant-garde, I don't believe that most of our political leaders have been corrupted. Thank you.
Thank you.